Welcome back to our conversation with Felix Zuloff, the legendary Swiss investor. Felix was just telling us we've come out of an extraordinary time when monetary policy worked very well for a long period. Now, that's about to change.
So, you're a cycle guy. You look at things across the long arc of what happens, these 5, 10, 20-year cycles. I asked you earlier what your average day is like. Do you look at all of these daily and weekly reports as just noise? Are they interference? People seem to obsess on every report, and you look at a long-term chart, and most of the day-to-day action, is insignificant. What's your take on the focus, the obsession of every open, every close, all this sort of, especially now that you've stepped back and you're more of a weekly advisor than a daily tethered to the machine?
Well, I'm one of those poor guys who never lives in the present but always in the future, you know. In a way, I draw like a sine curve for a cycle. And according to my analysis of the big picture of monetary factors, of market prices, trends and momentum, and valuation and sentiment, etc., I try to place on that sine curve where I think the economy and the different markets are at the present time. Mm-hmm. And then based on that, I read reports and I read the newspapers and I glance through the newspapers and reports and I try to think whether the news that are important today confirm what I think is where the markets are in the cycle. If they do, go on to the next thing. If they don't, then I have to check it out, whether there is some noise, an aberration, or a delay, or whatsoever. That's the way I look at the short term.
How do you avoid the classic investor foible of confirmation bias, especially with the internet? You could very easily only read things that agree with you and ignore everything else. How do you avoid falling into that trap of, oh, well, this guy agrees with me, I didn't realize what a genius he was? I know a lot of people who fall into that trap and find themselves quoting to me people that, well, you're quoting me guys that say what you're saying. Look for the contrary argument. Is that an issue?
It is an issue. It is an issue because every human being tends to be lazy and tends to like people and opinions that agree with him and not vice versa. My situation is that I really grew up in the whole industry as a maverick. I was never a mainstream guy. And therefore, I'm used to be away in terms of opinions from others. And I feel best when I can feel lonely and others are, the majority is on the other side. But I read them, I look at them, and I check it out. And, the markets are horrible. The markets tell you relatively quickly when you're wrong.
Mm-hmm. So let's talk about.
So I'm very risk averse. I'm very risk averse. I like to make money, but I hate to lose money, and therefore I rather make a little bit less, but not lose money. That is something I have learned from youth on. I wasn't born with a golden spoon in my mouth, so I had to make my fortune first. All through hard work and suffering, and I don't want to lose it.
So because of that, you keep an eye on risk management and
That's
capital
right.
preservation. So
right.
so we've talked about some of your better calls, bearish in 73, bullish in 82, bearish on Japan in 80, and bearish in the U.S. In 87. And then getting out of the way in 2000, I found over the years that sometimes my really bad picks or bad calls have taught me a lot of lessons. Any in particular stand out for you that you came away with, okay, that's a new insight?
In my younger years, in my younger years in 74, when I was bearish on the markets, I turned bearish on Japan and didn't understand that market for some years. And that was a horrible mistake. It was a mistake by a missed opportunity and not by losing money. But it was a horrible mistake.
And how about more recently? Any things that stand out that you might think is potential lesson learned?
Well, you can read in Barron's in March 09, I turned bullish for a rally. I thought it would be 2 to 4 months and go up 25% to 40%. And I didn't expect that rally at the beginning when it started to last that long and go that far. Once it never corrected, I had to go back to my drawing board and do the homework, and I figured that it was very similar to two previous cases in the history. One was in the U.S., that was in 1938. The rally had the same characteristics in terms of fundamentals and also in terms of technicals. And the other case was in Japan in 1995-96. Very similar case like that rally 09 until spring 10. Both rallies lasted about one full year. Both rallies were eventually fully retraced. And that's what I think will happen here too.
I've been looking at 73-74. As a comparable, we fell about 55% in 73. The bounce back wasn't quite the same, and it was in a different context. Obviously, the rates, interest rates and inflation rates were so much different in the 70s than they are today. But that's interesting, 38 and 95 in Japan.
Yes.
So now, here we are, it's 2010. What are you looking at? What sort of stuff catches your attention? You mentioned earlier this is a fascinating time to be investing. What makes it so?
Well, we come out of a time where monetary policy worked extremely well for quite some time. It worked well for the economy, because when the Fed or central banks cut interest rates and stimulated the system, you had good growth following through later on with a normal time lag, and you had capital markets rallying, credit markets, as well as equity markets and commodities, etc., etc. This time is different because we have such a high level of debt that monetary policy has become very inefficient. And, you know, in 09, we had monetary policy alone would not have worked if the Fed and other central banks did not go out and buy for trillions of dollars and euros financial assets in the market directly. Because monetary policy alone did not work. We have basically zero interest rates around the world in the major industrialized economies, and that alone is not working. In a situation when you are have too much debt and the private sector begins deleveraging, monetary policy doesn't work. It's similar to what happened to Japan, although the problem there was even more severe. What works is fiscal policy, and fiscal policy gave us this kick in 09 and carrying through the economy up to this day. But these fiscal stimulus programs will have run their course very soon. And then we are back to final demand. So we had three factors moving the markets. One was the stimulus programs, the other was the restocking of inventory throughout the manufacturing sector in the world, and the third was central banks manipulating financial markets up to the point where they got the prices where they wanted them. And And I think quantitative easing to that degree is not possible in the current environment without first having a crisis again, because you run into political problems. And the same is true for government spending on the size that we have seen last year, because the political framework is such that some people are very concerned about the debt we are piling up virtually everywhere. And therefore, the markets are now forcing the hand, and you see that the markets are beginning to break down. The deflationary forces are gaining the upper hand. And the Western world is really hoping that China will bail us out by buying all the goods we want to sell. Now, I just came back from a three-week trip to China, and I think my view is very different. I think China is in the early stage of a decline, of an economic weakening that will probably turn into a hard landing.
So you're in the Jim Chanos camp, who looks at China as just another boom about to bust.
I'm bearish cyclically. I'm not sure about the secular framework. I'm not sure about that. But it doesn't matter at this point of time. At this point of time, the cyclical forces in China are bearish. They have the biggest problem for the Chinese people are the run-up in home prices over the last 18 months of about 100%. Private debt, private sector debt in China is almost the same as in the U.S. relative to the size of the economy. And the people cannot afford housing anymore, and therefore the government wants to bring housing prices down. And they will be successful with all the tightening steps they have undertaken. The problem is you cannot just hurt housing. The economy is a mechanism that is interlinked. And if you hurt housing, you hurt many other sectors too. And I'm bearish cyclically for the next 2 years or so. It could be that thereafter we won't ever see 10% growth again, but maybe we can see 4 or 5%. That's possible.
10% growth in China, we're talking
that's
about.
Over.
No, that's done. So by the way, I've been sort of critical on the consistent data we get from China. How seriously do you take the numbers that we see from the Chinese, central authorities? Is it something that we should take with a grain of salt, or what's your perspective?
You should take them with a grain of salt. I think they are trying to improve the numbers. I don't think that they are cheating intentionally so. You have to look at some statistics and compare it to some other statistics, and then you see some flaws all of a sudden, and that shows you that you should take those numbers with a grain of salt.
Interesting, really interesting. So it sounds like the U.S. Is in bad shape, Europe is in worse shape. Of all the big economies, the Chinese sort of find themselves sliding, but in the land of the blind, the one-eyed man is king. Any areas of the globe that are looking reasonably attractive? South America, Pacific Rim ex Japan, what else is sort of works?
Well, never before has the world economy been as globalized as today. I have recently looked at the correlations of economies, GDP growth numbers, etc., and I have looked at correlations of equity markets around the world. And these are historically the highest correlations ever. That's why being bearish on one major economy you have to be bearish, or one major market, you have to be bearish on all the other equity markets as well. They all move together. And being bearish on equities on a cyclical perspective over the next 2 years or so, I'm also bearish on commodities because of what I said about China.
Including gold?
No, gold is not the commodity. Gold is a currency, and it's the only currency that has no liabilities and cannot be mismanaged by its own central bank, etc., etc. So gold is different. Gold, I think, can get hit here for maybe $200 to the downside, to about $1,000, $1,050 or something like that, for a big shakeout. There was a little bit too much noise in the gold market recently, but that's another opportunity to buy, because eventually gold is the best store for your savings over the next, I would say, 5 years or so.
And how do you deal, let's talk about the gold standard again. You know, one of the things that Keynes had said about gold is, why should our economy... why should our growth rate be subject to how much gold we manage to scrape out of the ground? For the people who seem to be arguing we revert back to a gold standard, how do you answer that? How do you respond to that?
I don't think that we can go to a gold standard again, because if we went to a gold standard, there is not enough gold around to cover all the needs of all the countries to cover their currencies.
Mm-hmm.
So gold would go to $50,000 or whatever and become very illiquid. But gold, in one form or another, will play an important role in what will be the next currency system once it will be born out of the ashes of the current currency system. You know, and therefore, I do believe that gold will be the best way to move your own savings from the old world that is in sort of a final game until it breaks down completely and we have a new system written up and formed. That's probably the best way to move your savings over without losing money.
So it sounds like you're ultimately looking for something to end up replacing the EU, the U.S. dollar, even the Chinese system. Are we looking at some brand new world restructuring? Are we going to still see the old political lines? How does this play out?
I really do not know. I think that our systems are not functioning. We need a new generation of politicians who are completely free of the old thinking, and Europe will be the euro will be disintegrating, and we will go through a lot of pain in coming years and changes. And at some point of time, a new generation of politicians will arrive, and they will tell the truth, and they will tell the people, we got the problem, we have to fix it. It's going to be painful for a number of years, but we have to do it for the sake of our future and our children.
See, in the U.S., we only have politicians who tell us what we want to hear, and very few who say, now here's some unpleasant medicine, it's going to be uncomfortable, but you got to suck it up because the alternative is far worse.
You know, that's the case everywhere, but I'm saying that will change.
I hope you're correct. So far, we haven't seen any evidence of that.
It doesn't change just by itself. I mean, you get these people strong leaders only after pain and hardship. You don't get them in a world of high prosperity. In a world of high prosperity, you get the weak leaders. In a world of hardship and pain, you get the strong leaders.
Really interesting. So do you ultimately see the EU breaking up? Does it kind of makes the British decision to avoid the EU look pretty smart.
Well, the EU may not break up, but the euro, the European Monetary Union, the monetary union, that will most likely break up. I do not see how it can survive. You have a currency for different economies with completely different economic structures, and one size fits all in terms of monetary policy, currency policy, interest rate policy just does not work, because over the long term the productivity differences are such that you build enormous imbalances and stress, and currencies are here to balance imbalances. And if you take that factor, the currency, away, then you have to balance imbalances through the real economy adjustments. And that's much more painful.
So we're going to end up with the Greek drachma again and all the various currencies for France, for the UK, for Germany?
Most likely.
Very, very fascinating. And we're coming up on an hour, and I appreciate all this time you're giving us. Let me switch gears with you. We've been talking about a lot of macro issues and a lot of very, very big picture discussion as to where things go. Let's drill down a little bit. What, anything specifically? You mentioned gold. What else catches your eye? What else do you think is interesting? Even if you're not ready to buy it, what might you be looking at buying 1, 2, 3 years from now?
I think equities in the very long term are interesting investments. But we are not at the point where we should buy them for the long term yet. We are in a structural bear market that started 10 years ago. I talked about the valuation cycle. We have gone a far way already in valuation declines in Europe. We have gone from 4 times book value to about 2 times or 1.3 times book value. We will probably go below book value. In the U.S., we haven't done as much work on valuation yet. Book value is 500 in the S&P. Usually, secular bear markets end at slightly below book value. So there is still some way to go.
So that sounds like you think we're going to breach the March 09 lows. Is that a fair statement?
I think we'll see it again within the next 2 years. Yes.